This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, as they do every year, right in the kind of the early part of April, they announce what the preseason schedule is going to be, and the preseason schedule opens up where the Indianapolis Colts come to Seattle to take on the Seahawks, and of course, Mike Wells from ESPN.com gets a chance to come out here, have some lattes, maybe get a little Copper River salmon if it's still a little bit left, and all those different things. Mike Wells from ESPN.com, thanks for joining us. How you doing?
Oh, Clay, two things. If that happens, you know, with the first preseason game, I get to come back to my old stomping grounds. If there's time, maybe head over to Ellensburg and check out my alma mater, Central Washington University, and get to see my main man, John Clayton. And the biggest thing is the Colts will not go 13-3 this year. I'm going to put it out there right now.
Okay. I'm glad to see that you're up front about saying that, which is very good, Wellesley. Hey, and see, and you got to understand, I mean, the story about this, I mean, Mike Wells is as objective, sometimes as tough a reporter on a team as you're going to find. And at one point on, you know, just a bad Ryan Grigson put together team, he put the notion, it's like, yeah, I think they're going to be 13-3. He's like, okay. And of course, me being the jerk that I am, I keep on beating him up on it all the time.
It was 3 years ago, you know, the year they got Andre Johnson, Frank Gore, Trent Cole, Todd Harriman's. I was like, okay, maybe they're going to be able to take another step from the AFC Championship game. And let's just say that AFC Championship game has been the highlight of this franchise the last 3 years. It's been bad, bad, bad. And I think they're going to continue to struggle until they get that franchise quarterback, Andrew Luck, back out there.
Oh, yeah, no question about that. We'll get into Andrew Luck. We'll get into the Colts. But I guess, you know, one thing to put on the side right now, out of the blue, the Seahawks put, you know, one of their main ventures in free agency on Barkevious Mingo coming in to maybe be a strong side outside linebacker starter and maybe a guy that can contribute on the pass rush. What are the Seahawks getting in Barkevious Mingo, and what did you see of what he was able to do in Indianapolis?
You know, I think I talked to Brady Henderson, who covers the Seahawks for years, and he asked me the same question. He goes, what are they getting out of Mingo? And the reality is, you're not getting a whole lot. I mean, I don't know if Pete Carroll and that defense can get out of him, if they can take his game to another level, but I just was not overly impressed with Mingo last year. You know, you would think whatever team he goes to next, or if he's going to get it mentally, that, all right, this is a guy with a former top 10 pick in the draft. Will he get it going? I think the time is ticking on him. He had way too many flashes and not enough consistency for me. I think you would see one of those plays like, all right, maybe he's going to get piece it all together and he's going to reach his potential. But then there's other times you look at it, you're like, this guy's just getting blown off. He's trying to get on the edge and he can't turn the corner on the tackle. There was nothing. I can't sit here and rave and say, all right, the Seahawks are getting a guy that's going to come in and be an impact player on that defense. Because if I said that, I'd be flat out lying to you, unless all of a sudden he puts the pieces of the puzzle together and he can reach that potential.
What was exactly his role in Indianapolis on the defense?
You know, and that's the part that's frustrating, because anybody who has paid attention to the Indianapolis Colts over the last couple of years knows they have really struggled when it comes to being able to get to the quarterback. So the opportunities were there to be a pass rusher. He couldn't thrive in that role. You know, they wanted him to be a pass rusher, and he just couldn't take advantage of that, because anybody who has any potential to be able to rush the quarterback had an opportunity to get snaps on his defense. I think they had 25 sacks for the entire year, tied for like 19th or 20th in the NFL, and that doesn't get the job done. And Mingo didn't thrive in that role. I'm not sure what he's going to do in their defense in Seattle, but in Indianapolis, his goal was to get to a quarterback, and he just didn't do that very well.
I mean, off the top of your head, what was his playing time roughly? Did he earn enough playing time to show much? Or, of course, that's obviously selling something, because this defense was terrible last year. And it's like, if you can't earn the playing time on a defense like that, that's got to be an issue.
Well, off the top of my head, he did not get a lot of snaps, which should put up warning flags. It's not like you're playing with the Jacksonville Jaguars and it's hard to get snaps on a defense that is very, very good. If you can't get significant snaps on a defense that flat out stunk last season, that should really make you think about the player. The player is truly a guy that's going to be an impact. But again, maybe the situation where the Seahawks are looking at, like, all right, the Indianapolis Colts did not use Mingo the type of way, you know, use him in the way that he should have been used. But, you know, he really couldn't get to the quarterback. And that's why, you know, Chris Ballard, who basically took a one-year flyer on Mingo, didn't bring him back.
Okay, so now let's go to the Indianapolis Colts, and I know Andrew Luck, particularly with the coaching change and that has been available, starting to talk and all that stuff, and the team is acting as though everything's okay with him. They haven't gone out and panicked on a quarterback. They traded down in the first round to move away from quarterbacks. It's pretty well set that they are confident, it seems, that Andrew Luck is going to be there and be able to play. Problem is, as he said this week, he hasn't picked up the Duke yet. And throwing.
Yeah, exactly. And I will tell you this, they are very confident that Andrew Luck is going to be back. Confident to the point that Chris Ballard, who he has really been adamant in not saying anything about Andrew Luck being ready for 2000, you know, playing. He didn't do that last season. He kept saying, you know, we're going to take it, you know, patient approach. When Andrew's back, he's back. But it was during the combine when somebody asked him, you know, is there any doubt that Andrew Luck will be ready for 2018. Chris Ballard said, there's no doubt in my mind. And you can see what they're doing. They're being very, they don't want any kind of setbacks, especially with Luck saying this week he felt like he skipped some steps in the rehab process. That last October, he tried to rush because he wanted to get out there. He's that competitor. But now they're like, we're going to take a very methodical approach to the situation. I'm one of those people, I do believe Andrew Luck will play, but at the same time, I'm not going to put both feet in the water and jump in and say I'm 100% sure he's going to be there, because I need to see this in the steps along the way. He's got to get out there and throw the football, first of all. Then you got to see how he responds after having heavy passing days. Is his shoulder going to be sore? Is he going to have soreness? Then you got to get him in a preseason game, which that Seattle game, I believe Andrew Luck needs to be out there. You can't keep him in bubble wrap. He needs to play. And then when the regular season comes, how can he respond when he gets hit? When he gets hit hard on the right shoulder, or he lands on that right shoulder, or he has a game where he throws the ball 45 times, how is he going to respond? The first step is throwing the ball, and then how he responds to those situations before you can fully believe that Andrew Luck can get back to being what he was prior to the injury in week 3 of the 2015 season.
Yeah, no question. But here's the one thing I'm kind of wondering about, because honestly, I don't know if we've really been through something like this since Jim Plunkett back when he was in New England. Because, you know, obviously, Andrew Luck, and you know, I know I get beat up in this town because I'm the biggest advocate of Andrew Luck. I think he's great. some people think, oh, no, he's no good anymore, and I disagree, because even, you know, in that last year, he was 8-8. He carried them to 8-8 when he was last playing. But, you know, the fact that he played more than a year with that bad shoulder, tells me that, it has affected his recovery. I mean, he had the surgery a year ago in January, and he still hasn't thrown the football. And then I'm sure mechanically things have become a mess with him. How much damage has this team done to him?
Well, the biggest thing is I feel like this is shutting down. I know Andrew Luck's that competitor, but the fact that he kept going out there and he kept playing through this situation. I mean, you forget, like I said, week 3 of the 2015 season. And had he not unfortunately suffered that lacerated kidney in week 9 of that season that ended his year, he might have continued to play on that shoulder even more. 2016, he re-aggravated trying to make a tackle off throwing a pick 6 in week 2 in Denver. Keeps going in that situation. And what people tend to forget, Andrew Luck had a career-high completion percentage in 2016 when his shoulder was still bothering him and he was missing at least one day of practice each week throughout that season. He had a career high completion percentage. I just feel like, you know, and I've tried to ask Andrew multiple times in multiple different ways, but his Stanford education he has outsmarted me each time. Asked him, does he regret not having that shoulder surgery sooner? Why not just shut it down and have that surgery sooner? And he's like, I don't want to look back. I wanted to play, blah, 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 blah. And it was one of those situations. We were talking about Ryan Grigson, too. Ryan Grigson wanted to win. He was in a situation where he had to win in 2015 because he brought all those guys in. And then 2016, everybody was on edge because of the Grigson-Pagano problems, and Grigson needed to find a way to win. And then you get a new general manager, and Chris Ballard basically said, I'm not going to risk my franchise quarterback for 1 year. He was worried about having his longevity with him playing another 10, 12 years, and that's what Balor wants, and that's why he was not worried about taking his lumps. So the fact that Balor came in and said that is a good sign that he's worried about the future instead of trying to worry about immediate success.
How do you feel about the, I mean, honestly, I think you, I think Chris Balor got the biggest break in the world when Joshy Boy McDaniels turned down the job, stabbed all the coaches that were loyal to him to try to come to him, you know, screwed all these families and all this different stuff. And then to get a guy like Frank Reich, who I thought should have been in the first wave of coaching interviews, but the only reason that he didn't is he was so focused on trying to win a playoff game for the Eagles, helping out on the staff, that he elected not to really do the interviews. I think the team came out so much better with Reich as opposed to Joshy Boy McDaniels.
I love how you call him Joshy Boy. I love that because, you know what, he basically, like you said, he stabbed Chris Ballard in the back on that situation. That was so rude, so unprofessional, and he better hope that he gets a head coaching job in New England after Belichick leaves. What I like about Frank Reich is Frank Reich, the moment he came in, he said it's not only about one player, because everybody, the question is Andrew Luck. And yes, Andy, we know Andrew Luck's value and how good he is. But him, Balor, and Frank Reich share the same vision. They want to build a complete team and not having to just rely on one player. We saw what happened in Philly. Carson Wentz has the ACL injury. Nick Foles comes in and has a hell of a late season run, and in the playoffs, obviously beat the Eagles to the Super Bowl. So you like that they're on the same vision, and you're right. And from a respect factor, when you have a guy who says, you know what, I'm not worried about myself and trying to line up my first head coaching job. I want to focus on this organization and help the Philadelphia Eagles be the best offensive team as possible. You got to respect the guy like that. You got to love that his focus and his commitment is on the current situation and not trying to look ahead.
Talk about Chris Ballard, because it's kind of interesting the way that he handles things, because obviously they've got a lot of cap money, a lot of things to do, and you know, the first move that they make is they trade back from 3 until 6, which of course is interesting. And then you look at their free agent list, and it's really not much. I mean, you know, Danico Autry, Ryan Grant, Matt Slauson, and Keith Acker, you know, at $705,000. That's it. I mean, they basically have not tried to really use free agency at all to fix this team.
And Balor he's been very upfront about this. So this is not one of those situations where you're like, all right, well, they had, you know, 70 plus million in salary cap space, and Balor was talking about it, and then he didn't do anything. He has been very adamant in saying he wants to take the same approach that they did in Kansas City and build through the draft and have those guys develop that way. I did a story and going back to 2012 when Andrew Luck entered the NFL. The Colts have been 25th or worse when it comes to having drafted players being on their roster. And, you know, that shows that Andrew Luck covered up so many of their flaws, because they got to the playoffs those first 3 years. Without Andrew Luck missing 28 games the last 3 years, the roster flaws really stepped to the forefront, and that's why they haven't been to the playoffs. Three teams that have always been in the top 10 in that same stretch: Pittsburgh, Green Bay, and also New England. And we know how those three teams are always going to be in the mix when it comes to being title contenders. The Green Bay this year, unfortunately, because of Aaron Rodgers' injury, didn't make the playoffs. But those three teams are always in the top 10 as far as having homegrown talent. And that's exactly what Chris Ballard wants. That's what he wants to do. He's fine. I had a conversation with him. He's fine taking the criticism when people say he didn't spend any money. He doesn't want this stuff where you overspend for guys. You don't want to overspend for players who are basically B caliber. People say, well, Jacksonville worked out with Jacksonville. I think Calais Campbell, that was a great pickup. It was a risky one, and it's one of those situations you just panned out for Jacksonville. It's like you're rolling the dice and hope it works out. Ballard doesn't want to do that. He wants to draft, which, put in perspective, when he traded back from 3 to 6, to get two more second-round picks in the draft coming up in 2 weeks and another second-round pick in next year's draft. So you got to commend Ballard on the job and staying steadfast in what he wants to get done.
Yeah, I like him a lot. I mean, is the thinking that, the best case that Brandon Chubb drops down to number 6 because they are switching to a 4-3, and if that's not the case, then they take a cornerback?
Well, I would say this is probably the pecking order at 6. Of course, it depends on how the dominoes fall.
Yeah.
You look at Bradley Chubb as a guy. I've been driving that Chubb bus nonstop. We already talked about their lack of pass rush. If Quentin Nelson at 6, I know guards don't really go that high, but hey, their offensive line, it has stunk under the in the Andrew Luck era. So you look at him, and then the wild card for me is Minka Fitzpatrick from Alabama. I know some people project him as a safety. I talked to him on the phone the other day, and I said, I know you're going to say you'll play wherever a team tells you, but if there was a position that you wanted to play specifically and if you had to choose between one or the two, what would it be? He said outside cornerback. The Colts need help at cornerback. Losing Rashawn Melvin, going to the Oakland Raiders. Releasing Vontae Davis during the season. You're looking at young guys with Quincy Wilson, Pierre Desir, who you guys are familiar with in Seattle, and Nate Harrison as your top three cornerbacks. You get a guy like Fitzpatrick who has a nose for the ball. You're taking a step in the right direction when it comes to trying to improve that defense.
Indianapolis Colts open up the preseason against Seattle here. And looking forward for Mike Wells to be here. Hey, Mike, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Clay, it is always good to talk to you, man. Take care and enjoy the draft in a couple weeks.
Okay, sounds good. That's Mike Wells, ESPN.com. Read him good stuff on the Colts, and, of course, keep up on the Andrew Luck situation. All right, phones, top of the hour. Keep going. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Lots of topics right now to throw out here and get your reaction to. I mean, first off, are you okay on the way the Seahawks handled Colin Kaepernick? I am. In fact, in some ways, I think that the Seahawks probably feel a little bit used because I don't think they leaked out the idea that they were in touch with Kaepernick and they postponed a visit from Kaepernick because he hadn't got his plan together on what he's going to do on the national anthem and all that stuff. That comes more from Kaepernick's side, and I'm sure that Kaepernick's trying to make sure that he gets his name out there. But, of course, I think that probably hurts his chances of coming here because, again, it's like, okay, well, we called. We're interested. We're still interested. You figure it out. Get back to us. And the next thing you know, it's all leaked out, and now the controversy is, Chris Long's ripping this team for not doing anything with him. But all they did is like, okay, where do you stand? It's like, okay, well, we'll get back to you. And all that different stuff. So where do you stand on Colin Kaepernick? Where do you stand as far as where this team is heading for the backup quarterback situation? I thought it was going to be Mark Sanchez. He gets a 4-game suspension. So now is it going to be Kellen Clemens? Is it going to be a draft choice? Is it going to be Derek Anderson? Is it going to be Matt Moore? Who's it going to be? Give us a thought there, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Thought on Sebastian Janikowski now being in the main candidacy for the kicking job for this team, competing against Jason Myers. Do you like that move or not? Janikowski has had a great, great career. He's 40 years old. Concern there. He's coming off a back injury, but of course, I think he could have been able to come back last year on the roster, but they were happy enough with what was going on the kicking front that they decided not to bring him back then from the injured list. And then, of course, now he's a free agent, but now he's a Seahawk. Thought on that one. Are you okay with Dante Johnson now signing ahead of Byron Maxwell? Maxwell couldn't come to a deal. They signed Dante Johnson from San Francisco. 866-979-3776, 206-421-3776. Other topics to go to. Are you content right now with the start of the Mariners season at 7-4, despite having four starters that have been out for a good portion of this season, or at least some part of the season? They do get Nelson Cruz back today. He's expected to be in the lineup. I guess he's going to be in the lineup, but I guess he's going to be on the roster, so we'd figure that he's going to be in the lineup. So Nelson Cruz expected back today. Ben Gamble may be back by Monday. Still waiting for Mike Zunino. Still waiting for Ryan Healy. Still waiting for Erasmo Ramirez. So thoughts on the Mariners and their 7-4 start. 866-979-ESPN. 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Arn in Olympia. Hey, Arn.
Hey, John. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. I just think the Kaepernick thing, I like it to Tebow and some of these other things where you just can't have your backup quarterback be such a big story and the issues that can bring, including what Kaepernick brings.
Right.
And so
I agree with you.
I trust what the Seahawks are going to do. They'll find somebody, whether it's a veteran or a Trevon Boykin or whoever it might be, because hopefully he never has to play.
Right. That's the plan. And I think that's what happened last year, is that they sat down with Kaepernick. You know, they went over, it's like, are you okay to be a backup? And naturally he's going to say yes. He wouldn't be, you know, he's not going to come in here and take away Russell Wilson's starting job. But then the more I thought, they probably said to him, it's like, now you understand, Russell doesn't miss any plays. You may not be on the field at all. And I think he probably muttered something that, you know, kind of gives him, well, I want to play. And so it's like, okay, well, it looks like, and that's when Pete Carroll came out the next day and says, well, it sounds to me like, you know, Colin Kaepernick wants to be a starting quarterback. And so they didn't sign him. And so I think the same thing goes. But I think at some point, as talented as the guy can be, sometimes it can be more trouble than it's worth. And in this case, I think it'll be more trouble than it's worth, because now you have the controversy, you have all these different things, and then what you don't know is what kind of player you're getting. You're getting a talent, but a talent that was 4-20 in his last 24 starts.
I agree. I agree. I just wouldn't touch him with a 10-foot pole just because of everything you just talked about.
Yeah. No, I think that I think that's probably the wiser thing to do, because again, it's like, okay, so you know, Pete Carroll is going to give players the ability to express how they want to do things, what their feelings are, all those things. That's not going to change. You know, they're still going to be, you know, the freedoms to do, you know, the social stuff and all that stuff. But if it adds too much and it starts to hurting the team, and I think in the case of Kaepernick, it could hurt the team more than help the team.
I agree, because it's, you know, again, he's a backup quarterback.
Right.
And we don't hear anything from the backup long snapper, or we don't hear anything from the backup guard. We shouldn't be hearing anything from the backup quarterback either until they're playing.
Mm-hmm. No, Arne, I think you raise a great point.
Well,
thank you so much,
John. Thank you.
Okay. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, as we get together here on this Saturday. Let's go to Taylor in Tacoma. Hey, Taylor.
Hey, John. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm pretty good. It's a good Saturday.
Yes, indeed.
I was calling. I was asking my friend the other day how likely he thought it'd be Earl getting traded, and that was before
right.
we found out about everything. Now what do you think about Earl being traded to the Cowboys, and do you think there's already been a talk?
I do. Clearly there's been a talk, and now I think the chances have increased. I probably took it a little bit, maybe a little bit too much. I think it's now, you know, maybe as much as 50%. I think it's that much. But, you know, overall, I think that, you know, it does enhance, because, again, you know, it's like now they have the room not just cap-wise, but financially to be able to put in his contract. And understand, you know, the fact that he's really interested in being there, that, you know, they now, I think that, you know, he won't be as adamant about getting a contract if he's traded there. I think that he'd be willing to wait. And so if that's the case, I think it increased to 50%.
Do you think he'd do well in Dallas?
He'd do anywhere. I mean, the guy is a Hall of Fame caliber type of free safety. He'd do anywhere, but certainly the fact that Chris Richard is down there as a defensive back coach and pass coordinator, I think that would certainly help out. I mean, so all those things, I think, are all in the nature.
Okay. And then last question, how well do you think Saquon's going to do fantasy-wise next year?
I think he's going to be. Well, it depends on the team he goes to, obviously. But let's say he goes to the Giants. Now, again, I'm not sold on the Giants' offensive line, but, I think overall, I think he's going to do very well. I mean, this is, in my opinion, one of the best running backs to come into the league, if not the best, since Adrian Peterson. And I think he did pretty well for fantasy.
Yeah. Do you think you should pick Saquon over Le'Veon, with how Le'Veon is so up in the air with the contract and everything that's going on with him next year?
Better just wait to see what team he's on. You got to see what kind of offensive line.
Yeah, true that. All right, John, you have a wonderful Saturday. Have a good day.
All right, thank you very much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Matt, what do you have on the line right now? Let's go to Steve in Renton.
Hey, John, how you doing?
Good, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Thanks for taking my call. A couple of things I would kind of just like to address here. First of all, as far as the Kaepernick situation, I do believe despite what the owners may think about the stance personally. Let's just kind of call it for what it is, and it's about the bottom line, and people aren't talking about, which I think is the true driving force for the collusion, which is the Fortune 500 companies. You know, now we all know people are not going to tell certain owners like Jerry Jones or Robert Kraft who or what they can't sign. But if you have your AT&T's and Verizon's that's threatening to pull their sponsorship, that, I mean, okay, it's easier for them to just rid themselves of anyone. And in fact, I think if they was to say, okay, let's just do away with Brady because of whatever reason, the owners would have to make it happen. On the other hand, I do feel as though, and I mean, the reason I say that is because, okay, Kaepernick, he expressed his stance, whatever the, you know, okay, I get it. Now, if you look at Eric Reed, who is, you know, a few years younger, playing at a very, very high level, no one has touched this kid yet. And, you know, the only thing that they have in common, you know, is their stance that they have chosen to take. I don't get it. You know, people aren't really talking about that. So, and I think as much as the general managers or, you know, coaches would like to bring these guys on their roster, we all know that they're not the ones that make the decision. And you're not going to compromise, you know, with the bottom line of any NFL franchise. That's just how it is.
See, so, okay, couple things on that. It's like I still don't get the collusion one because, again, it's like they have 32 owners in this league can be on the same page as everything. I've been covering this league for over 40 years. I've never seen that happen. And so, are there a majority of the owners that would block his coming back? Absolutely, 100%. But I can't see, you know, a case for 32. But here's where the difference is, and here's where I side with you. I mean, the Eric Reed situation is ridiculous. Ridiculous in the sense that, okay, so he's taken the stand on the national anthem, and now he's being penalized like that. I mean, no, he needs a job. He should be offered a job. I think it's savage that he hasn't had one. I mean, he hasn't had, and see, here's where the difference is. Eric Reed is out there as a player just waiting for a job. Colin Kaepernick has sued the owners who are employing the players. And so that's where the difference is. I mean, you know, if you're suing the owners for the collusion, which he's claiming, you know, it's like you don't get much sympathy from the owners. And so it's a different thing. In the case of Eric Reed, I'm 100% in your agreement. I mean, it's like, how can they not sign this guy? He's one of the best safeties out there. He's been a good safety for many, many years. He goes to one visits the Bengals. Bengals say, okay, are you standing or not standing? And he says, I'm not standing. And so then they come back the next day, don't offer him a contract, and then say, oh, all our players are going to stand. Okay, well, the one that I really feel, I don't feel sorry for Colin Kaepernick at this stage. He's the one who elected to take the lawsuit. He's the one that now limits his ability to get back in the league because of the lawsuit. The one I feel sorry for, and if there's any others, it's Eric Reed and the others.
Well, I agree with you. Okay, as far as where things are currently stand with Kaepernick, I totally agree. Because when you decide to, you know, to file that lawsuit, then you're kind of opening up another can of worms. I get it. But I feel as though to get to this point, I strongly feel as though that this wasn't just the owners. It was driven by corporate. You know, I mean, because there's a lot of people out there that has expressed, you know, that, okay, well, you know, if you sign this guy, then we're just going to threaten to pull out sponsorship. And as you know, I mean, this thing starts to unravel and it falls down like a domino effect. You know, you have your consumers that were threatened to pull their business away from these corporations, which entails is going to trickle that down to the NFL. No one wants to lose that.
No, agreed. But of course, again, I mean, the league, in my opinion, should have taken a different tact. They should have taken the tact that's like, fine, players didn't have to be standing for the national anthem before 2010. So let's go back to the old way, and we don't put the players in that position. We don't put the sponsors in that position. We don't put business in that position. But so far, they continue to elect to say that they want the need to have the players be on the field and act for the national anthem. And so until they resolve that, I mean, that's now putting the players in a very tough spot. That's why, again, I don't feel sorry at this stage for Colin Kaepernick. He's elected to sue the league, and now that limits his opportunities to come into the league. That's on him. In the case of Eric Reed, all he's done is not stand. Again, I'm not agreeing with his position. I'm just agreeing with the freedom the players have, and I think it's bad that nobody has signed this guy.
Okay, that's fine. Okay, John, thanks for
Steve, thank you so much. Very intelligent call. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Joaquin in Tacoma.
Hey, John, thanks for taking my call. I had two questions. Well, will Donnie Schell ever make the Hole?
I think maybe at some point as a senior, because he's not going to make it as an active at this stage, and he's probably at that senior stage right now.
Okay, my second question is about Amy Trask. I don't know if we have history with her, but
yeah.
Do you think she was qualified to be a replacement for Goodell when he leaves?
I'd say she could be a candidate without question. I mean, she's been very actively involved when she was with the Raiders. She obviously knows law. She's obviously very organized, and she's obviously very good. So, yeah, I would think that, she could be a candidate to be the commissioner once Roger steps down after this contract.
Well, thank you so much, John. Have a good weekend.
Hey, Joaquin, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710. ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
Our thanks to Matt Nelson for running the show, producing the show, and being with the show. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Billy in Seattle. Hey, Billy.
Hey, John.
Yes.
I kind of want to talk about the Seattle Mariners, and I know we have won every series so far, and I just kind of think that we get a little bit too excited when we know we do a couple good games and we win, and then we go back to being the same old Mariners. So, I mean, I'll start believing that we'll actually, be a good contender when we're, like, midway into the season. But I just think it's too early, to even count on that. Because, I mean, was Felix the one that got lit up in the Kansas City game? I didn't see that. It was 0-10. We can't really count on Felix. And, it's just a matter of time before Paxton breaks a nail and he's out for another month. And I just really don't see, consistency in the past couple of years with their team.
Well, see, and that's where, again, Dave Grosby and I were talking about in the last hour. It's like I'm a big advocate of following the schedule and, of course, winning the winnable games, right? And obviously, you're not going to win every game. It's like these are professionals you're going against. But when I saw the Kansas City series and the way that they're rebuilding and they weren't scoring runs, and, the A's come in with a team that's still trying to rebuild, I mean, and particularly here, down here, I mean, this is a stretch where they should win 4 of 6 games. And if that's going to be the case, now you're looking at a record of 8-5 going into the Astros series, and of course that's respectable. But again, it's like the two games over 500 against wins that you should have had. And again, it's like that's what you need to do. I mean, you need to win the winnable games. I follow this in the NFL. You follow this in baseball. And again, this is not to slight the A's. It's just that right now, the Mariners are a team that is constructed to try to win in the 80s and try to do the best they can. Where right now, the A's are trying to go for the upside and getting the young prospects to try to build for the future. So it's like these are the winnable games. And you're right. If you overjudge it, you're going to be wrong. Because like let's say for example, let's say they win the next two. And they're sitting there now 9-4. And you're thinking, wow, look at this start. Next thing you know, they go against the Astros and they get swept. Well, guess what? That puts you back to where you were and it gives you a reality check. So, no, I agree with you. I mean, you don't want to go overboard, but also you have to credit a team that was able to at least battle through, 11 games right now when you don't have, 4 of your 9 starters and still be able to come out and get some runs and score some points.
But that's true. I mean, in the past couple of years, we kind of transitioned, from the best bullpen to, one of the top scoring teams. And it's kind of a surprise. But, sometimes they're just not even on the same page. So, when our pitcher's doing bad, our bats go cold. And, I see that too. But, I mean, as of right now, though, I mean, just, I don't know, maybe it's just years of just seeing our team just continually lose. I I can't really put a lot of...
Yeah, just don't... I guess the key if you're a Mariner fan is just don't overreact. Just kind of just kind of ride it out. You know, see,
well, I mean,
because again,
I want them to win, of course, every game possible. But I mean, look at the A's. Even though A's are still rebuilding, we've been rebuilding, you know, every year. But the A's always seem to know how to play us well. I mean, like, what, a couple years back, we were one game away from getting at least into the wild card, right? And then they beat us out of that whole series. And then I still can't forget that one. But, you know, then you go into Astros. I mean, the Astros are still hot. And the Astros, you know, you're going to count on them being a contender this year. And then you look at, the Angels and then Shohei Ohtani. I mean, he's killing it right now. So,
right, agreed.
I mean, with our pitching rotation, the only people I'm really excited about, you know, I mean, I like Paxton, but, you know, we don't get Paxton all the time. And, you know, like I said, he's prone to injury. But Mike Leake, I hope to see more of him and more of his stuff. And then was it
Marco Gonzalez is the wild card. If he can really kick it in, then all of a sudden you have the possibility of four consistent starters. Hey, Billy, thank you for the phone call. Let's go to Thomas in Olympia. Hey, Thomas.
How's it going, John?
Good. How are you?
Well, living the dream, brother.
Absolutely.
So my question is more along the lines of, you've already kind of answered it earlier, but about the national anthem and them making people having to stand for it now.
Yeah. Well, again, so far they haven't made that edict yet. I mean, again, I know they have the owners' meeting coming up in Atlanta next month, and they'll probably come to some conclusion. I mean, right now it says that all players must be on the field. All players have to be, you know, or there could be fines and different things like that. And then they should stand. Should stand is the key word right now. We'll see if they change that. But should stand right now is the one. But again, I mean, the Bengals came out and said all guys must stand. Maybe it's going to be a team by team. Maybe it's going to be a league-wide thing. Probably the smartest thing, in my opinion, would be just don't have the players involved. But then that's not what they want to do. They want to have the players involved. So if that's the case, should stand is the current rule. We'll see if that changes.
Okay, now my question for you is, I believe how you believe that, you know, they shouldn't even be on the field, etc.
Right.
Now, do you believe that they're doing all this because the DOD is actually paying millions of dollars?
I don't know if that, I hope that they stop getting the money from them, because again, it's the revenue in this league is so vast that again, it's like, you want, I mean, listen, if you're the National Football League, you want to do as much to honor all those who serve us. I mean, you want to do everything possible to have a great respect for the people that sacrifice their lives for us, that do all these different things and all that. So I'm hoping at this stage that they've weaned themselves off the money part of it and are doing it just for the respect. But again, the controversy that's involved in this, to me, is pulling the game down and disrespecting the people that do so much for us. Don't like that.
Exactly, brother. I feel you on that. So do you think this is going to have more of an impact than it did last year for people not kneeling or for people kneeling?
No, I think it's going to be, I mean, again, it's like, you know, it's now going to be in the news now for 2 years. And I think, you know, those who have opinions aren't going to change. And, you know, those who are upset are going to stay away. That's why, again, I think that the smart thing to do is take this out of the equation. Again, if this was something that was there since World War II, then it'd be a different story. No, this is something they did because of the DOD money, and in 2010, and now I don't know if they're still collecting. They may still be, they may not be, but I think at this stage, I think out of respect, it'd be better to pull things out. But again, that's not what the league's going to do. Hey, thank you. Let's go to Josh in Silver Lake. Hey, Josh.
Hey, Professor, how's it going today?
Great. How are you?
I'm doing good. Just a real quick.
Yeah, real brief here. We're up against it, so.
Okay. Yeah, Russell Westbrook's quiet triple-double average this year. What are your thoughts on that, and what do you think that's going to do for him as a player in his career legacy?
Yeah, I mean, as a player, he's going to be one of the best players. He's going to probably get him into the Pro Basketball Hall of Fame. But the problem is that ownership has there robbed him of so many good players. And I think you can see, you know, once LeBron probably ends up going to Los Angeles, that things are going to start to fall down for Oklahoma City. Remember, they had Harden, they had Durant, and then they add him, and that should have been worth at least two championships. They absolutely blew that. So Westbrook, the player, fantastic. Will he be in the Hall of Fame? My guess would be yes. Unfortunately, I don't think he's getting any rings. Hey, thank you, everybody. Thanks, Matt Nelson. We'll be back on Monday at 10 and next Saturday at 9. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.